You're watching The American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
We are powering through your morning. We are honoring it. We are honored that you chose to spend this time with us here on The American Journal. Now, almost as always, we have another phenomenal guest for you. Tim, tell them a little bit about Suleiman. Let's introduce him. Suleiman, welcome to the show.
Yeah, Suleiman is a great friend of mine now. He hosts a lot of spaces. He's one of those people that is currently on the ball in news, everything. He's very active. I mean, this guy is on spaces like 12 hours a day. He's covering everything. Since the beginning of the conflict. And he's very knowledgeable. He has degrees. He has a lot of knowledge to back it up. So, Suleiman, let's get you on here because the people need to understand some things about what's going on. But we want to cover about you specifically as well. Suleiman, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on.
You put on the jacket for us. We're all professionals. See, yes, we're all professionals in the studio now.
Yeah. Exactly. We've got to go professional. We're in the big leagues now.
Yes.
Yes, sir. Yeah. We wanted to have you on. We had you on the gray area. We're like, this was a fantastic conversation.
Yes.
And we were like, all right, we need to make this happen. So I'm glad we could. Suleiman, let's just talk a little bit about your background because not a lot of people know you on the InfoWars and a lot of people want to know, you know, what got you into all of these things, what's your background, just a high level overview so that people understand.
Yeah, sure. So my background is I've got a degree in law and then a conversion into mathematics, became a mathematics teacher. Then I've got an MA in philosophy. And then I was doing my PhD in philosophy when I became quite viral on X.
Right.
And the thing with becoming viral on X is it becomes very difficult to finish anything related to academia because you get a lot of complaints. And so I thought, look, what's the best thing to do is just pause that, make sure that I'm, continue my career in terms of from the media perspective, the journalistic perspective, and then I can go back and complete my PhD. But yeah, that's currently my academic background. In terms of, obviously, I've studied as well in a religious setting as well. So I have a decent background of the understanding of Islamic religion, whether it's legalistic theory or theology and philosophy. So that's kind of my background. Obviously, I'm from a socially deprived area. So I've done a bit of everything when it comes to before social media and before my kind of academic career.
Right. I think you do such excellent coverage on the region because of that and many other factors. Of course, you're just very well studied in really all forms of geopolitics. Doing the breaking news updates, I believe you were doing them during the 12-day war as well, correct?
Yeah, we were 24-7 during the 12-day war. We were 24-7 now as well up until, I believe, a few days ago, maybe the first 22 days, and then we've kind of reduced it to like 15, 16 hours.
Yeah, I got to ask you, Suleiman, how do you do it?
Yeah.
Like Rex and I will come on here, we'll do a 3-4 hours, we'll debrief afterwards. We might have a show in the afternoon as we do gray area, but we're like gassed. And I wake up, Suleiman's on. I go to sleep, Suleiman's on. Yeah. I'm like, this guy is a
killer right
now.
The sky is blue, the birds are chirping. Suleiman is on X giving breaking up.
So how do you manage to do that?
You got to just work hard, put the effort in. I've got Beatrix who helps me with the spaces. I've got my entire team of people who come on and give really good analysis. So I'm privileged in the sense of we've got a great team of people who come on the spaces and really contribute. If I had to talk for 15 hours, I think I'd be struggling.
We definitely hear that. What are you seeing right now, breaking news updates you want to give people, really just over the past week of coverage that y'all have been doing, the live reporting? What's going on in the Gulf right now?
Well, a huge amount of things are happening in the Gulf. We can deal with each thing at a time. So the first thing is, obviously, Iran has been hitting the Gulf quite hard. Initially, they were hitting the U.S. embassies and the military bases. And the reason was because those countries were colluding with the United States of America and Israel to destroy Iran. They tried to make it look like they weren't involved, but we know that they were indeed involved. They were allowing these countries to use their air base. We know now that they were, without a doubt, allowing them to use their military bases. In addition to that, they were giving them key intel. And that's one aspect of what they were doing. In addition to that, and separate to that, what we know is that is there's highly likely going to be, and I'm sure we're going to cover this in detail, a ground invasion into Iran. And these countries are complicit in the ground invasion. If you look at where the ground invasion is, and I'm sure we're going to go into detail with into that, but depending on what the locale of the ground invasion is, the stationing area could be UAE, Kuwait, or Saudi Arabia. So these countries are complicit. They have been helping the United States of America and Israel bomb Iran, and they need to be held accountable. And so when I see these countries being hit by missiles and drones, I'll be honest with you, it gives me great pleasure, not only because of their complicity in that, but as you guys know, when it comes to the UAE, I view them as Muslim Zionists, and they have been helping not only the United States of America and Israel, but if you look at what they've done in the Sudan, if you look at what they've done in the Yemen, if you look at what they've done in terms of perpetuating hatred against Muslims in Europe and in the West, generally speaking, if you look at the treatment of the underclass, I just see them as almost a sister to Israel.
So I have a question for you, Suleiman, because you were talking about the soldiers earlier.
Yes.
And I'm talking to Rex about this. I'm like, there's no way this doesn't become a bloodbath, because Iran knows this has been happening. Everybody's been talking about
this prepping for
weeks,
2 decades.
Right. So, you know, let's say we use the UAE and in these regions as staging grounds. I don't see how like thousands of Americans don't get slaughtered if we even try to land 1 foot on that island. I mean, they probably have landmines and stuff on the island. Everything. Are the Iranians prepped as much as the rest of the world is thinking?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And one can only surmise that. Yeah, I agree with you. There's going to be a bloodbath. The question mark becomes, what are they going to do and what the aims are going to be? So, I mean, look, there's a few possibilities on what they can try and take. They can either try and take Karg Island. That's one possibility. The other possibility is they could take the three smaller islands, which UAE lays claim to, which is Abu Musa, the greater tomb, and the smaller tomb, the lesser tomb. That's one option. The other option is, those are the two options. The other option is, the third option is they could take the three Hormuz islands, which is Hormuz, Lavarak, and the third island, Akhazem, I believe it is. So they could take one of the three Hormuz islands, or the other possibility is, and I'm starting to think that this is slightly going to become more and more of a possibility, is a ground invasion into Iran as well. So all of those things are possible.
Yeah, I want to ask you about this, because my dad had a caller on his show yesterday. My dad's very anti-war. He's very against all the operations going on right now. And this caller calls in and he says, Alex, you're wrong. I'm a Marine and they would never sacrifice the Marines. My dad used the example of kind of like a pawn sacrifice to open the engagement. I think that's exactly what we're seeing here. We have this kind of sacrificial array of forces, and it's just like Vietnam. It's just like Iraq. We have to do this one thing. We have to secure this one base, this one area. They get slaughtered. Oh, we got to do full ground invasion. We're at total war. What do you see the likelihood of just a mass expansion? And like in a month, we're looking at a totally different conflict.
I think what you're saying is extremely accurate. And I have been thinking about this a lot. And I am moving more towards that position that actually this may be done intentionally in order to sacrifice American lives in order to then galvanize the American public. You know, you can show these American soldiers in caskets,
yes,
their families grieving, and then you can basically manufacture consent into a ground invasion. That's a possibility. Or the other possibility is this is all a bait and switch, and actually they're going to do the ground invasion immediately through. And I've got some ideas about where they're going to try and do that. But yeah, I do believe that both of those things are possible. It's either going to be a operation into one of those islands, you have a large massacre of people, and then you manufacture consent for ground invasion, or it's already going to be, and actually all of this is a bait and switch, and they're going to do the ground invasion straight away.
But Suleiman, you know, I look at this, we've played these situations out over Iraq, Afghanistan, we see the ground invasions don't work. I'm more leaning towards the islands scenarios that you've drawn out, but you know, even if we take those islands, how do we even know that that's going to ensure that the strait actually opens? Because they still can launch from the mainland. And, you know, you're talking about these Marines being on this island, getting bombarded. They're probably going to be having drones launched at right. them every single day. And that doesn't stop the IRGC from launching its boats and having rocket launchers still launched at oil tankers. So how does taking those islands even lead to the opening?
So I don't think it will. I think it's going to fail. But I guess you're asking what's the kind of motive or what's Trump thinking?
Yeah, it's like, so what's the explain. Goal?
Yeah. So I believe when it comes, and obviously the goal is different for each one of them. So for Kaga Island, the goal would be this from Trump's perspective. He thinks that he can take control of the island. It could take a day or two to take control of the island. Their hope is that basically Iran's military is dispersed within the island. They're not aware about which entry point there's going to be. By the way, I disagree with this, but I'm just telling you what they're thinking is going to be. And they'll be able to get the soldiers in. They'll get the Marines in through the sea, through the land, through the amphibious unit. You take control of the area. Then you basically use it as a staging ground. You hope, and the thing is, what you've done is you've got Iran's oil infrastructure within there. Like 95% of their refinery goes through there. Now, they can realign that, and they would lose about 50%, but 50% loss is huge. And so what you do is you take control over the oil infrastructure, the oil refineries, and then what you do is you basically, you give Iran a very difficult decision. Do they bomb them or do they destroy their own oil infrastructure? If they destroy their own oil infrastructure, that will set them back decades. And so the hope is, or their hope is, that Iran doesn't do that. And then you've got that as leverage. And then you say, look, we'll give your oil back if you give us back the Strait of Hormuz.
Wow. So you're involved in a lot of these breaking news updates and on the ground conversations with people. We're talking about the Strait of Hormuz. The whole conversation is about it. It's shut down. But there's another potential closure happening very soon. The Yemeni people, the Houthi people, they've entered the conflict, they say, as well as Hezbollah. Potentially talk about the impact of a Red Sea shutdown. What's going on there?
Yeah. The Houthis have entered the war. At the moment, the strikes are limited. They've sent a number of missiles to Israel over the last few days. They've also said that any ships that are from the US and Israel will be stopped in the Red Sea. So that's already happening. But they haven't done a total shutdown. If they were to do a complete shutdown, that would have a major impact on the global financial market. You would see oil prices go well above 150, possibly even to 200s. It would be uncontrollable.
How likely? How likely is that? How likely is that scenario, that eventuality in your mind? Just a quick question.
Okay, so my sources on the ground tell me, obviously it's exclusive, then I haven't told my audiences, but my sources on the ground tell me that actually, if the United States of America does boots on the ground, they will shut the Red Sea.
Escalation ladder. Got to keep going up it on both sides, and they have escalation dominance because they have more they can do than we have to do.
Yeah. Well, and here's exactly. The thing. I think everybody around the world is looking at this and is like, okay, we're getting two different stories about whether there's going to be a peace deal, there's not going to be a peace deal. You and I talked about it on your Spaces, Suleiman. I thought the 15-point peace plan was very generous for the things that they were offering or Trump was offering. And a couple of the points I didn't quite agree with, Iran getting extra capacity to control the strait and having all the U.S. military withdrawn. So is there a way for them to come in the middle, or is it just like we're past the point?
Are they negotiating?
Yeah.
Are they? What's going on?
Yeah, I don't believe they're negotiating. What's happening is you've got Pakistan, Turkey, and I believe Egypt, who are almost acting as conduits. So what they're doing is taking the American information and passing it on to the Iranians. The Iranians are very clear. They do not want an agreement. They do not agree with those demands, even though, as per what you just said, those 15 demands are very much Iran-friendly. If you remember, before this war, one day before this war, Iran agreed to 0% enrichment. This was confirmed by the Omani mediators. This agreement allows for up to 60% enrichment as long as it's used for civilian purposes and defense purposes. So this is a very much friendly, Iran-friendly deal. It's also something that Iran would be amiable to. There is a couple of things in there that I think that they would need to add, such as possibly they're saying reparations, but largely the rest of it, it is very amiable to Iran. And what it shows is what we've been saying, that Iran is winning this war. No way would America have given this 15-point plan, which is so Iran-friendly, if they weren't losing the war. And this is what we're seeing right now.
But
there's
why would Iran say no to it? That was my thing. I'm like, if it's so friendly, is it because they know they're winning? They're like,
battle,
we want more. Is that what's going on here?
Well, I think the reason is because they know, and Trump said it yesterday. So I said this before and Trump confirmed it, that deal, although it looks brilliant, it looks like an amazing deal. The problem you have is which Trump said yesterday, the Americans and the Israelis will just be back again in a year or two time. And right now, you've got them exactly where you want them. They've made so many errors in this war that they've got themselves in a situation where they're very weak when it comes to Iran. Next time, Iran may not be as lucky because America, as I know the Israelis always make this mistake. They'll make the same mistake all the time. But the American military is actually very proficient. They won't make the same mistakes again. And right. So the issue is, Trump said yesterday, he said, well, when we're gonna finish this, we're going to leave this war. And then another president may come and try and bomb Iran for their nuclear facilities. So what they're saying is, I'm going to leave this job undone, and then someone else is going to come and bomb. And this is the biggest problem Iran has. This is why Iran should never agree to a deal. And actually, I'd say worse than that. Iran has been way too soft. Iran, in my view, needs to go harder against the Gulf countries. In my view, they need to give them 3 days' notice and say, you need to basically remove all American military bases. You need to make sure America is not involved in your country. If you don't, in 3 days, we're going to destroy your entire infrastructure, your desalination plants, and you'd give that warning to the UAE first. And I believe that they'll bend the knee. But if they don't, you take out them, and then you do it to each one of the Gulf countries one at a time. I believe that Iran, in my view, has been a bit too soft in this war. They've done really well, but I think that you need to be cutthroat.
Well,
and I think they've not been as cutthroat.
We look at something else that's gone on, and it's been very interesting to me to see the mad dash, not just of Trump, because everything Trump does has to be done now. We declare victory now. The war is over now. I've already won. But we look at Netanyahu, okay? And you can say America's involved in this war, heavily involved in this conflict. It's a big drain on us. Israel is literally right there. Okay, so they're not thousands of miles away. They're right there. And while all this is going on, while their cities are being bombed, while they're in conflict in this war with Iran involved with us, they're invading Lebanon. They've displaced a million plus people. There are buildings exploding everywhere. There's rubble everywhere. I believe they've lost 12 tanks fighting against Hezbollah. First off, how do you view the ever-expansive nature of this war? As in, like, how many more of these regions will it just swallow up? Will it expand to places like Syria and Lebanon as it already has? And do you think that they have any control over that or where it goes?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer that this is part of Israel's expansionist agenda. They want to expand throughout the region. They want to take control of the entire region. But in terms of what you mentioned, in terms of Lebanon, they are losing really badly. And this is what we predicted before this war. We predicted this in 2006. We predicted this in 2024. We predicted this now. There was no way they could defeat Hezbollah. They don't know. Hezbollah knows the terrain really well. They know the landscape really well. They've hit over 130 Merkava tanks. I believe they've taken out more than 80 Merkava tanks. In one of the days, they even took out almost 20. So they are struggling really badly. They've had a huge loss of life. They've not been able to penetrate in any areas. So what they did yesterday was, which is what you're showing right now, which is yesterday they start bombing specifically those areas in South Lebanon because they've not been able to succeed in the ground invasion. What do they go back to? They go back to just bombing from the air, hoping that this causes dispersion of the troops. But that won't do it because actually what they've not learned again from previous wars, and this is because of the part of the military analysis, is Israel's continue to always bomb areas before they go in. But what happens when you bomb areas? It causes a huge amount of rubble. When you basically cause a lot of rubble, your tanks can't get through, and then you require bulldozers to go in to remove and disperse the rubble. And that just means more tanks are going to be taken out.
I heard Lawrence Wilkerson talk about it, the great colonel. Maybe he's been on your program. Heard him talk about it, I believe, with Larry Johnson. He says, yeah, they don't even maintain proper following distance with the tanks. And they roll in, they all get slaughtered. It's because they're not used to actually having to fight a professional military battle. Used to kill little kids.
Didn't they have to call reservists up too?
425,000?
Yeah, so not all of those people are combat ready, if I quite understand the situation.
Yeah.
That you're so right about that making those errors. But worse than that, the US military did an analysis of the 2006 war, and the US military literally said to them, look, these are the mistakes you're making. You're bombing areas and then trying to bring tanks in, and then that's how Hezbollah is able to take you out. They never learned in the 2024 war. They got destroyed. They had to go back, and they're doing the exact same thing, the exact same mistake again. So it's not only a lack of military capability in terms of the soldiers, but it's a lack of military understanding or nuance, arrogance, and not even looking at the analysis that's even given to them by their U.S. partners.
Okay, so one thing that I want to touch upon, because you were talking about it just before we talked about Lebanon, was about Iran taking a harder stance and going harder in terms of like the demands. Okay,
yeah.
I want to push back just a little bit, you know, because we like to have healthy debate here. And I don't see a scenario in which the United States ever withdraws their troops without that region forcefully, right? We would rather maintain our ego to be the military power within that region and have, you know, the Gulf states struck, and it would just accelerate the war to where the Gulf states will attack back. And Iran has just as much to lose. And their government is kind of in a shaky situation because there is a lot of instability within the population right now, regardless of who's stirring the pot and things like that. So I'm just trying to understand, like, how does pushing harder do any good for Iran at that point? Because I don't think that's the solution.
Excellent question. So I had the same view as you, I'd say up until a few days ago, because I've been really thinking and reflecting on this. And the way Iran has conducted the war is exactly the same manner I would conduct the war. The problem is, I think about it and I think, would I be the best leader in this wartime situation? And I think not, because I'm too soft. You need someone who's cutthroat. You need someone who's brutal. When it comes to the GCC countries, they can't do anything more than they're already doing. They don't have the military capability. They don't have the military personnel. Who are they going to get to fight for them? Some Pakistanis, like, nobody's going to fight for them.
Right.
They can't do any more than they're already doing. This needs to be a warning to them to say, look, you need to stop or your country will be obliterated. In terms of, and it needs to be a demand, in terms of the American military base has been removed from the country, I'm in agreement with you. I actually hold this position, which is, as much as many people within the resistance want that, I can't see a scenario where that would ever happen, because these Gulf states are so underneath the shoes of the United States of America and Israel. They would never, ever want the U.S. to be removed. They live in fear. They don't have the social and the psychological ability to think that they can fend for themselves. They're always relying on that. Never mind the fact that the U.S. and Mossad are intrinsically linked within the entire apparatus of those countries. Those kings, those rulers, MBS, MBZ, know that if they were to ever get out of line, the United States of America and Israel would assassinate them and replace them immediately. So I agree with you. I don't think the bases will be removed. I'm saying, if I was Iran, I would not be conducting the manner they do. What they're doing right now is they'll bomb Iran's energy infrastructure. They'll find one or two countries and then they'll hit them, or three countries. They'll hit them plus Israel. That's just not enough, because think about it. They're getting hit more. So in my view, it's very simple.
Really quick, we're coming up here on a break. Join us here for the next 10 to 15 minutes. We love you, Suleiman. Thank you so much for coming on the program. Powerful information on the American Journal. You're going to want to stay with us. Go to realalexjones.com if you want phenomenal vitamins or minerals or supplements.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know the power of turmeric, but have you felt it? Have you tried the ultimate turmeric gummies, the delicious way to harness the ancient power of golden turmeric, supercharged with ginger root and black pepper for maximum impact? Each gummy delivers 125 milligrams of premium turmeric extract packed with curcumin, the clinically studied compound shown to support healthy inflammation response, ease everyday aches, and promote joint comfort so you can move through life with ease. We added real ginger root, trusted for centuries to calm digestion and soothe the stomach, plus a precise dose of black pepper extract with pepperine, proven to boost curcumin absorption by up to 2,000%. That means more of the good stuff actually gets where your body needs it. No capsules, no bitter aftertaste, just one tasty tropical-flavored gummy a day, or two if you're feeling extra, to help you feel lighter, looser, and more energized. Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, ancient wisdom meets modern science in the best-tasting form possible. Grab yours today and start feeling the ultimate difference in health. With Ultimate Turmeric Gummies, inflammation doesn't stand a chance. Get yours today at thealexjonesstore.com.